Welcome back.
Callie, why do I do this? Callie, help me. Camera's here. The computer's here. What are we doing? We're looking here. We're looking there. We're looking here. We're looking there. I can do this if I just sing randomly. I'm excited to introduce you to someone. I have to stop clapping. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Welcome back to my channel, Wendy. What is this? Why do I do this? Welcome. Thank you so much. I could do this. I am excited to have my next guest. Her name is Chennai, and she recently disassociated herself from the Jehovah's Witness organization. And her story is so amazing because most of the guests that we have on our shows are born and raised. One of the things that I find fascinating about her story is that she converted as an adult. And just the way she tells her story is amazing. So let's get right to it. Before we begin, I want to thank you so much for liking, subscribing, and sharing our videos. As I say in every intro, it just means that with every subscriber, we are that much closer to people watching and understanding and knowing that there really is peace and love and healing on the other side of indoctrination. Be sure to like and subscribe and hit that little bell at the top. That'll let you know every single time that I post a video. Be sure to check out my TikTok channel where we just kind of have really cool conversations in the comments. Hey, Chennai, welcome to my show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you for having me.
I want to hear all of it because we do get a lot of people on our show who were born and raised, and it's actually not common to get people who were, you know, fully adulted. What kind of a word is that? Fully adulted. And then they made the conscious decision to join the religion. So catch us up a little bit on where you're coming from and go.
Okay. So I'm actually originally from Zimbabwe. Born and grown up there. And then when I was 16, I moved over here. That was 2009. So I started a weekend job. And that's when I actually started studying the Bible, because the owner of the salon where I was working, she was one of Jehovah's Witnesses and a pioneer. So she started studying with me. And while I was studying, though, my family, the relatives I was living with, they were opposed. They were not happy with it. And eventually they kicked me out. And so that was when I was 18 now. So I had been studying for almost 2 years. And then after I got kicked out, my boss took me in to a home, and I got baptized in November 2011.
You know, it's interesting. We've had previous conversations, and you mentioned that even when you were a child or growing up, you did have some kind of a spiritual or religious pull. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it related to your feeling that becoming a Jehovah's Witness was right for you?
Yes. So I lost my mom when I was 6 years old. And so that, I remember the first thing I was told as soon as I heard the news was a family friend took me in her lap and she said to me, oh, your mom has gone to heaven now. And, you know, she's with God now. And that put a question in my head. Why would God need my mom? What for? Like, if he's God, he has everything. He's all powerful. Wow. What do you need her for? Yeah. And yeah, so that would make me think about, you know, the Bible and God a lot. And I would have questions even because my family was quite religious. So they would go to church a lot. And, you know, certain things I didn't understand, the Trinity didn't make sense to me. And also seeing a lot of hypocrisy and things like that just didn't sit well with me. So, I had always had questions. And I remember reading the book of Revelation as well in high school and just being like so fascinated by it and feeling like, oh, these things need to be happening and stuff.
Wow, you read Revelation in high school. Wow, yes. Most people are reading like Canterbury Tales or like Shakespeare, but no, this girl's out here reading Revelation. Quick question. When you were taught about how you were going to see your mother in heaven, and as you're going through growth and development, what was that like for you? Like, because to be honest, to be reunited with a dead loved one in heaven, that would, by those doctrines, you would have to die to meet up with them. Yes. Again. So what was that like for you as learning that as a young child?
Well, I think that is what actually is the root of my struggle with suicidal feelings, because that it was logical to me. If I die, then I'll see my mom. So from a young age, I did have suicidal feelings and, you know, a lot of depression and anxiety as well, because when my mom died, I then lived with my mom's sister, my aunt. And I put it like that because of how distant our relationship is. It wasn't a good relationship. Like, I think it was the contrast between, because my mom was very loving, very warm, very affectionate. And then all of a sudden I'm with my aunt, who is very different. She's very authoritarian, very top down. And, you know, it just didn't, we couldn't get along.
So it would make sense then for you to just want to go be with your mom.
Yes, exactly.
So. I'm so sorry you went through that. Let me just pause for a minute. Mm. And that's why a lot of people end up converting, is because of the hope. So now you're older and you're studying. Continue. Yes.
So actually, that's how the Bible study was offered to me, because my boss overheard me talking to a client, because the client was asking about me and she overheard that I'd lost my mom at a young age. And she was like, well, do you want to see your mom again? And I was like, yes. So that's kind of started everything going. Yeah. So, I really, really wanted to believe in that, and that was really the main pull. And also at the time I was studying, I was going through a lot of stressful situations with the relatives I was living with. They were like kind of taking advantage of me. I was supposed to be, you know, focusing on my education, but I was the cook, I was the nanny, I was everything at the same time. So it was a very difficult time, and the Bible study was like this escape, this warm, loving environment at the time. So yeah, and the lady who my boss, she really is genuinely a lovely person, a very warm, loving person, and I guess she felt like a mother to me as well. So yeah,
sure. And there are genuinely good people in that religion. I think the worst thing I could ever say about Jehovah's Witnesses is, like anybody else, they're just misguided. That doesn't make them bad people.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So then what happened? So what, you got baptized and you studied for 2 years, and then you get baptized and continue.
And so I'm living with my boss in her home. And what I realized is she was actually in a very abusive relationship with her husband at the time. And I was beginning to start seeing some cracks with the organization, because she would speak to the elders about things and they would take his side and they wouldn't really listen to her or what she was going through. And what I was seeing was like really serious emotional abuse, psychological abuse. And if he could have been physical with her, if she wasn't such a strong person, then he would have been. I definitely feel he would have been violent as well.
Wow.
And I remember her little girl, it was so bad that her little girl, like, we would go to the meeting and when we're coming home, her little girl would say, oh mommy, can't we go to a hotel or something, do we have to go home? Like, so yeah, that's the kind of environment, you know, she was in, and it was so difficult for her. Thankfully, eventually, she managed to divorce him.
But they were witnesses, and they would go to the Kingdom Hall and act like nothing happened.
Yeah, well, he wasn't a witness. He was studying. He was studying the Bible. So I feel like maybe the elders were trying to appease him to try and get him into the religion. instead of actually listening and seeing the situation for what it was. Right. And she even had a fear of like answering up because he would be in her ear, literally in the kingdom hall, in her ear saying, "You're stupid, you're this, what makes you think you can answer up," and all this.
Wow.
And doing that in the kingdom hall to her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But obviously no one would realize what's happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course. Because silent abuse doesn't have bruises. That's why.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So eventually he obviously didn't like me because I'm very honest and direct and I don't like play along with, you know, abuses. And so he didn't want
me. I like you. I like you. We're friends. That's just not okay. And yeah, I will cut someone.
Exactly. So he decided he didn't want me there anymore. So one of the ladies we were studying with actually took me into her home, and I was basically using her dining room as a bedroom for a while.
I mean, two birds, one stone, sleeping while eating. But anyway, so that's a terrible living environment. And meanwhile, you are still trying to do what the governing body says, right? Like, now you're not pursuing your education, which is something you wanted to set out to do, right?
Exactly. So I, you know, was convinced by the rhetoric about higher education being refuse and, you know, it will corrupt your thinking and, you know, it's Satan's institutions and all that. So I fully bought into that. And my teachers were livid because they were like looking at Oxford or Cambridge for me and like, yeah, they were not happy. But because my whole life, like I always wanted to be a writer, like my mom, because my mom was a writer. So I wanted to also be a writer. And I was interested in journalism as well at the same time. But then now to be a witness, I wanted to bring my life in line with Jehovah and all that. And so I gave everything up that I was working towards. And now I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was trying this job, that job. I even tried night work for a while. It was just a terrible time. And, you know, that I think that contributed a lot to later on how depressed I got. And also I started getting pain in my back. And, you know, because I was just working so hard, trying so hard, ministry, you know, regular auxiliary pioneering. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All these things, just trying to be the best witness I could be, really.
Being the best witness. And you know what's interesting is like when you think of being the best witness, it's not really necessarily being a best, first of all, best in, denotes competition, but being godly enough, like being enough. And so you exhaust yourself with all these side jobs when you could have just gone to university and pursued a career that you were not only talented in, but also loved very much. Exactly. And now you're having chronic health problems. But would you agree that it fits the narrative of if I'm struggling, then I'm spiritual. If I'm poor, then I must be favored.
Oh, yes, exactly. Exactly. There's definitely a lot of like, oh, the righteous one suffers. So you're thinking, oh, I'm suffering. Satan's angry. I must be doing the right thing. And you're not realizing how you're
dancing. Because apparently Satan is some kind of a genie where if you're not worshiping the God of Jehovah's Witnesses, Satan's going to give you your job, your university. Satan's going to give you a loving mate, you know.
Exactly.
What a horrible person.
I know. He's gonna give you all your emotional and physical needs.
Everything's gonna be met. Like, who wants that? Not me. Okay, so now you're diagnosed with chronic health problems that are probably, would you agree, we talked in our last conversation was we were talking about unresolved trauma, and then you start, it's because when it's unresolved, it starts manifesting itself in our bodies physically. So if you'd like to speak to that and how things started unraveling for you.
Yeah, so it got to a point. So I had been having the pain and just still pushing through, just you know, trying to strong arm it and just get through everything. And then one, it started becoming a thing where, like, I would need to go to work in the morning and I would be getting phone calls. Chennai, where are you? It's 10 a.m. It's 11 a.m. And I'm on the phone. I'm like, okay, I'm coming. Let me just get up. Let me just get dressed. And I physically couldn't get up out of the bed. And yeah, it was just, and then I would be like in bed for a month and I would have like major depressive episodes and all of this. And it got to the point where I just had to stop working. I couldn't work anymore. And what that meant is also I couldn't continue living where I was living anymore because I couldn't contribute anything. So, yeah, I had to approach the government for help at this point.
Smart.
And, yeah, that's how I was able to, you know, get into temporary accommodation. Yeah, so that's when I also started therapy as well. And at the time, I was still very much PME, even throughout the whole time I was in therapy. But I still feel like there were seeds planted in my mind, one of which the therapist would always say to me, Chennai, you're always talking about what you should want, what you should do, and what you should think. But what do you really want? You know, what do you really think and what do you really feel? And that really stuck with me. Yeah.
Well, what do you think of that? Where do you think that came from?
I think it came a lot from childhood. Like, as I mentioned, my aunt, I believe my family suffers with a lot of narcissism. And, you know, I remember her saying to me once, because as I said, I tend to be quite an honest person. I don't like pretense. And
that's why you're on my show.
Yeah. So there was a time where she was telling me this story about something that happened, and I just wasn't interested. And it was clearly showing on my face. I was listening, but I clearly wasn't interested. And she's like, oh, you should look like you're interested, even if you're not. You need to smile and laugh and act like you're interested. That's what a good child does. Yeah, things like that. So there were always those kinds of messages. Oh, you're so stubborn. You're like your father. You're like this. You're like that. And so even though I would rebel against it at the time, it still was messages going into my head that the way you are is not right. You should be different. And so in the organization, that is their whole thing, is this is how you should be as a person. So it just fit in well with that early, you know,
comfort.
Yeah, exactly. I was used to being told what I should and should not do.
And you know what's interesting about that is that I was raised in complete dysfunction also. I mean, even on the podcast and in this video, sometimes I'm even like, I am real time talking about dysfunction. Life is dysfunction, but sometimes when we don't resolve that dysfunction, we tend to look for it and not even conscientiously. Sometimes look for it and we recreate it. Yeah. And even in the organization, for me, a lot of my relationships were dysfunctional. And, and again, I love that you mentioned it goes back to childhood. Yes. Interestingly, I just recently had a conversation with someone and they were discussing with me about their family member who was also suffering from depression. And, you know, depression can have, I mean, disclaimer, depression can have so many pathological reasons. But as it pertains to Jehovah's Witnesses, this particular young person wanted to have a position, was waiting to be appointed in the congregation and got overlooked again and again and again. And now this person is wondering why they're so depressed and have no joy or zeal for life. And wouldn't you agree that, and I've experienced that too, we don't relate it to what happens in that organization. We don't give it any thought that that's what it could be.
Yeah, we think it's me. There's something wrong with me. I must be the problem.
Yes.
And we're seeing the way the organization is manipulating us to feel that way. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So you get through therapy, and which I mean, I'm pretty vocal about how I'm a big proponent of that. So yes, that's brave. And congratulations on doing that.
Thank you.
So then what happened? So what's next?
Yeah. So then I had to move around a bit because of, you know, my living situation. I had to move to temporary accommodation. And so I moved to a different congregation. I did, before that, I actually was in the Korean language group.
Wow.
Yeah, that was yet another attempt to, well, actually, that was like an outlet for me because I, you know, was exposed to Korean culture like through YouTube and stuff, and I just fell in love with it. And I was like, oh, wow, here's something that I actually enjoy doing. So
yeah,
you know, I found like a loophole of a way to spend time on it. You know,
I found a loophole. I found a way to kind of be happy. And I'm, yeah, I'm in, you know, it's in this pursuit of getting prayers answered. So yeah, that looks good.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I was doing that. And then, but my home congregation, you know, was quite a warm congregation, like too warm in some instances, because they were always in your business. But they were quite a warm congregation, quite a loving and understanding congregation. Then I had to move, you know, because of my housing, and I was like, my health was progressively getting worse. And so I just had to stop the Korean and move to this other congregation near where I lived. And it was just quite cold, quite businesslike. And, you know, I had heard of such congregations, but I'd never been in one. So, you know, it was, yeah, it was an experience. And, you know, the just some of the people there, you know, I felt quite uncomfortable around some of them. And, you know, it was just, I started missing meetings quite a lot. And the elders, when they would like shepherd me and stuff, they weren't understanding. They didn't quite understand the link between, I wasn't missing meetings because I wanted to miss them. I was depressed. I was hardly able to brush my teeth, let alone get up and go to the kingdom hall, you know?
Yeah, and everybody knows clearly that that is a lack of faith. I mean, let's be real.
Yes, okay. Of course.
Your depression is your fault. We all know that.
Exactly. So anyway.
And so you're single at this point in time, right? Which already kind of makes you weird in the organization.
Oh, yeah. A single sister approaching her late 20s.
Oh no, the horror. Now we have a single sister who is like sickly, depressed.
Yeah. And I found,
what could go wrong?
Exactly. And you know, dating in the truth, actually, in the religion, was I found it very difficult because, like, especially as someone who had come in from the world, everyone else knew each other. They, you know, they had known each other since they were children. I wasn't in the friend groups. I wasn't in, you know, around people my age. Mainly most of my actual friends were a lot older than me. And so
that's interesting. Coming into the religion as an adult, yeah, you had a totally different perspective as to how relationships, all kinds of relationships, yeah, are formed. When you first came in, so you would have an excellent perspective on what the love bombing actually is like. Because when, you know, we were children, we don't really know what love bombing feels like until hindsight we learn about it. Would you say that for someone who was new as an adult, that was what actually grabbed you? Or was it the doctrine? It's fascinating.
Both. So with the love bombing, especially because I was, you know, that poster child that was kicked out for the religion, you know, I was like, oh, look at her, such an example. Oh, look, her answers are so amazing. And, you know, especially that initial stage, everyone wants to be your friend. Everyone is talking to you. Oh, you know, this person is taking on the truth so well. You're so spiritual, you're so this, and you know, yeah, so definitely that plays a part. But as you're there longer, you start seeing that it's quite a superficial love. It's not, they're not really interested in you or what you're struggling with or what you're going through. It's more just, oh, you're a good little poster child for us. Put your hand up. If you don't put your hand up, what's going on? What's wrong? You know?
Right. Right. Why are you depressed? It's your fault. Yeah. Why is your watchtower not studied? No wonder you're
depressed. Exactly.
Okay. So you're getting help from therapy and things start unraveling. For you, was it a moment or was it a bunch of little moments where you're like, that's it. This is
so
not the truth.
Actually, my wake up happened. So I stopped attending the meetings out of guilt, to be honest. So January of this year, because I just felt like I wasn't good enough. And I felt like I had my personal struggles and I felt like I must be destined for destruction. I must be the one that, you know, doesn't make it, because if I loved Jehovah enough, I'd be able to change myself. I'd be able to do what Jehovah wants me to do. And yeah, so I just gave up literally just under all that burden. And so it was actually a few months later, I was just on the train to somewhere, and I was listening to a podcast about Scientology. It was a Scientologist who had left Scientology, and he was just talking about high control religion and, you know, the indicators and his experience and, you know, the thing, how to identify a high control religion or a cult. And as I'm listening to this, I'm like, why does this relate? Why am I relating to this so much? Wow, that is this religion that I've, you know, this is exactly what's going on. And I had always had niggling little doubts about things before. I even remember a friend of mine and I saying to each other, it's no wonder people think we're a cult. But of course we're not a cult. But, you know, these things may make people think we're a cult. And it's like, no, Chennai, it is a cult. That's why those things.
Yeah, like even because you hear conversations of, well, it's like cultish. You know, it's not like, because people have an interesting perception of what a cult actually is. Like, you know, like dark cloaks in a circle, you know, sacrificing live animals. That's what a lot of people think a cult actually is. But now we know that that's not true. So, wow. So hearing about another religion is what prompted you.
Yes. And the methods of mind control and the love bombing and all that kind of stuff, the different things he pointed out. And I was like, wow, that's what happened to me.
And you think that if you would have heard about Jehovah's Witnesses, that you would have been more inclined to listen? Because at this point, were you already programmed that anything that remotely speaks negative, whether it's truth, especially if it's truth, would be considered apostate? Do you think that you would have listened to something that would even touch on Jehovah's Witnesses at that point?
So when I was studying, I had looked at some apostate websites and stuff, but obviously the study gets to you quite early. You know, with the idea about it being Satan's, you know, trying to draw you away from Jehovah. So you're already biased. By the time you start trying to research, you already have a certain view of these people. Oh, they're trying to take people away. They're trying to, you know, copy Jehovah's Witnesses or something weird like that. So I didn't really, I just kind of like glanced at some things and I might have seen some like comments online that, you know, were very angry, and I was like, oh well, that's not my experience, they must be crazy, you know.
Right. And did your study conductor say things like, well, Satan makes return visits too, so make sure you keep your study going?
Oh yeah, all those things you would hear. And and then over the years, as there would be moments where I would have doubts and I would look at things and then I'd be like, no, don't do that. And, you know, it's made to feel like it's even worse than, you know, being disfellowshipped for doing horrible things kind of thing. It's like the worst thing you could ever do. So, you know, there's that mental block of, no, I shouldn't do this. And yeah, like you said, that bias of against it. And so, but when I listened to this podcast, I was like, but wait a minute, I've never actually properly looked at this. Let me have a look and see what, you know, this is about. Is there maybe someone who's not so angry at witnesses or something? And that's when I came across some of Ray Franz, an interview by Ray Franz, and hearing him talk. And, you know, a lot of the things he was saying, I was like, wait, I've said those things. I've thought those things. And so why didn't I, you know, why didn't it wake me up then? But at this point, I was still like, well, I still think it's the truth. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then the moment where I was like, no, this is not, there is no Holy Spirit. There is nothing about this that is, that could be the truth, is when I watched that interview with, is it David Splane? At the Australia Royal Commission.
Jeffrey Jackson.
Jeff Jackson.
Are you referring to the part where, because I think you've mentioned this in our previous conversation. Okay, so we're on the same page. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, where he says, the lawyer asks him, would you say that you are the only channel that God is giving spiritual food to the world through mm-hmm. in today? And Jeffrey Jackson says, oh, that would be presumptuous to say.
Oh, that would be presumptuous of us.
So I said, okay. So I will take my presumptuous self and stop telling people that, because
I love
that. That is what I gave 10 years of my life to, you know, to that belief that you are the channel, God's spirit-directed organization. But no, I'm presumptuous. Okay, I'm sorry.
I love that you flipped it like that. I actually didn't make that connection. Oh, so you're saying that I'm presumptuous for believing what you say? Okay, then.
Exactly. And that was just the like light bulb moment. Like, this is all a lie. Because that is the perfect, can you imagine? That's a perfect witness. That what greater opportunity to be a witness than that moment? Mm-hmm. And that's all he said, it would be presumptuous. So that's when I started really researching the child sex abuse and just seeing all that filth. And I was just like, there is no way that this could be, you know, something from God, because, wow. You know, and if, okay, let's say that it is, then I might as well be Catholic or whatever, because you're no better. You've been telling me you're the better one all this time, but you're the same as all the rest, so what's the difference? How am I supposed to know the difference?
So you're not going anymore, you're struggling with your pains and your depression. Would you say that while you start unraveling this, your symptoms started improving?
Okay, so when I stopped the meetings, so this was even before the research or anything, I expected to get more depressed. I expected to go on this downward, like, self-destructive path. And I'm like, why am I so at peace? Why do I feel good?
What's yes, girl, yes.
Why do I not miss the meetings at all?
Right.
What is this? This is strange. So, yeah, and then hearing that podcast at this time where I'm feeling like, why do I feel good? Like, why do I have energy to do things that I wouldn't normally do?
It's a crazy thing, right? Like, you're feeling good and healthy and you're like, something's wrong with me where I feel good and healthy.
Exactly. So, yeah, when I really started looking at things, I was like, that's why, obviously, I would feel better. Obviously, I'm not cured, but... Mm-hmm. There is definitely a difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then you're missing now. Did they try and reel you back in and, you know, take us to the point where you're like, that's it, I don't want this. And I'm not sure if you're disfellowshipped or disassociated, or how you got to this point where you're on my show. Like, how did this happen?
Well, so obviously I would get the occasional text like, oh, what's going on? You know, how are you feeling? I sent a message to a few of my close friends and to one of the elders. I had moved back to my home congregation at this point. Mm-hmm. And just explaining that I no longer believe in the organization, and I will be writing a disassociation letter, and you know, wow, that is how I feel about it. And to my friends, I said, you know, if you want to hear why my reasons, then you know, feel free, and I'll let you know. Actually, there was one person that I sent it to that I knew would tell the elders. So I didn't tell the elders. She told the elders.
Yeah, you always tell that one person who you know is going to tell everybody. It makes your life so much easier.
Yes. So that's when they got in touch with me. I wasn't planning on meeting with the elders, but I watched a video. I've forgotten what his name is. I think it's The Falling Tower or something along those lines.
And he's great. I'll link him in the description. He only has like one or two videos right now, but his story resonated with so many people.
Yes. Yeah. And he talked about how he got the elders to disassociate him instead of writing the letter. So I said, I want to do that. That's when I was like, yes, I'm going to tell the sister, the elders are going to come. And also I felt like maybe something I say, I'm not hoping for it, but you never know that something I say in that meeting might plant a seed in one of their heads. Sure. So we met, and I was actually glad because one of the young people, he's now an elder, one of the people that, you know, has seen me the whole time since I came in, was present. So you never know. And at one point when I was talking about the child abuse thing, he was saying, oh, you know, it's one or two cases. And I said, in Australia alone, there's over 1,500. And he was like shocked. He didn't know that. So
even one or two cases, though.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's one too many.
Doesn't make it right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So.
So were you? Did you hear your own announcement?
No, because I wasn't attending meetings. But
yeah, like who cares, right? How long ago was this? Talk me, like, give me a timeline here. Was this on Zoom calls? Was this pre-COVID? Or because when you reached out to me, this was fairly recent. I think you were just kind of newly off the heels.
Yeah. So I stopped attending meetings January of this year, and then the podcast was maybe like March. Maybe June, mm-hmm. around June, mm-hmm. I was listening to the podcast. Then I spoke to the elders. I'm pretty sure it was sometime in August. Yeah. So the announcement would have been sometime in August as well. Yeah. So, yeah, very new, very fresh on the scene.
What an honor to have you here right after going through something like that. What does life look like for you now? How are you feeling? What's next on the horizon for you and your living arrangements? How did things come together for you?
Yeah, so at the moment, in terms of my living situation, I'm still in temporary accommodation, but mm-hmm. I should be getting something more permanent soon, thankfully. Mm-hmm. I am planning on starting university, hopefully next month. I'm going to be studying psychology, and I'm also going to be using that time to really like focus on writing and, you know, trying to maybe do a book because I mainly write poetry. I've never like written like prose or anything like that. So that will be my focus. And I'm just exploring, getting to know myself, and also working to get rid of, you know, guilt about, you know, just normal emotions and, you know, feelings and desires that we all have as humans, you know, learning that it's not wrong. It's okay. It's okay to like someone, and it's okay to, you know, fall in love with people who may not be, you know, perfect or, you know, this spiritual whatever. So I'm actually dating someone as well now. So yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I want to talk about that off camera. I am so happy for you. How are you feeling? How's your health since all of this? Because whether we, even though we make the decision to leave the organization, everything you went through is still a series of traumas. So how are you dealing with all of this now, physically and mentally?
Yeah, just one day at a time, really. As I said, it's not like I've been cured of my chronic pain or depression or anxiety, but you know, I am managing. I'm waiting on getting some more therapy because I know that is very necessary. And you know, but I am hopeful. And you know, I'm just, you know, taking things one day at a time, allowing myself to not beat myself up when I don't get everything done that I want to get done, or, you know, things like that. So
stripping that that need to be perfect all the time, or stripping that need to be around people who are who meet a certain standard. You know, I do see a question often asked, and I'm sure our audience would have this question too. You originally came in because of losing your mother and having a hope for something. What is that like for you now, knowing that it's not true? The hope, which is also loaded language, it denotes there's no other hope out there.
Exactly.
But what is that? What is that like for you now when you think of your mother and what the future holds?
Yeah, so actually, I feel like I still believe in something greater than the physical. You know, I still do. I mean, there's a lot to show that there's definitely more to our existence than just what we can see, touch, and feel. I'm sure even a lot of scientists would agree with that. Whether that's parallel universes or spirit world or whatever, we just don't know. I think there's just too much that we don't know to say anything for certain. But I also feel like, you know, with spirituality, I'm just open to hearing lots of different things. One of the things that would comfort me a lot when I was younger, because in our Shona tradition and culture, we are taught that our ancestors look after us. When they pass on, they go on to the spirit world and they look after us and they watch over us. And if anyone wrongs us, you know, they will make sure they sort out that person. So, you know, I had always felt like I felt my mom in the wind, or, you know, in nature and things like that. So I kind of still hold on to that as well. Yeah.
So you stayed close to your culture?
Yeah, surprisingly.
Wow, I love that. We didn't cover that, because you said you were a child in Zimbabwe, but you never said that you adhere to some of the culture.
Oh, yes, because Zimbabwe is a very Christian country, but it's also can be quite traditional as well. So my family, they were very Christian, but they also adhered to a lot of traditions and culture. So I am grateful for that, because, you know, it helped me stay grounded in my identity. And even like in the truth, you'd hear people say things and I'm like, yeah, but the Bible doesn't say anything against that. It's just culture. Right. It's nothing to do with the Bible.
I know a lot of people who this is such a common thing in the XJW community, is where people are holding on to the belief system of the resurrection because it's natural to want to see your loved ones again.
Oh, yeah.
And the amount of pain that occurs when you wake up to the fact that that's just not accurate. It's really awesome to see someone like yourself reconcile that, because it's a lot of people, I've heard quite a few people say, I don't want to wake up my family members because they're holding on to the belief system. It's all they have. So if you were to give advice to someone about that, and you especially know, because you held on to not only the belief of heaven with regard to your mother, but then you held on to the belief of the resurrection. What would you say to someone like that who is really wanting to leave the religion, but there's this the hope is still looming over their head?
I guess I would just say there's so much we don't know. And who's like, how can I put this? I just feel like no one has ever died and come back and said, this is what death was like, or, you know. If I'm saying so. Yes. Maybe because I like love science fiction, and there's a lot of different concepts, like in which one is it? Even if you think of the Matrix, you know, how do we know that our experience and what we're going through isn't just some big experiment? How do we know that God isn't just some scientist in a lab doing things, you know?
And, wow.
You know,
I love it. Yes, you're just like beyond this black and white in this little box thinking.
Yeah, I love it. There's just, the universe is too big. Like, there's so much to discover and so much we don't know. And like, I find things like that exciting and interesting. And, you know, there's a lot of and I think because I had, even as a child, I had looked into a lot of different religions and read a lot of stuff. So there's just so many possibilities that why confine yourself to just one thing? Like, it's very limiting.
Oh my gosh, such a positive way to look at this. I mean, after everything you have been through, you still find a way to kind of narrow it down to, you know what? I'm okay with the fact that we don't know everything.
Exactly.
And some people find that terrifying. Other people find that very freeing. So you're in the category of finding it freeing.
Definitely. Because if we don't know, that means we can imagine anything. I mean, if you think about, I've been reading 1984 by George Orwell. And you know, he's talking about telescreens. They would never have believed those things would actually exist. Those things in that book now exist. He was just imagining. He was just pulling things out of his head, and they exist now. So who's to say that the things of our imagination can't be true in the future?
Wow. Wow. I love it. I want to have you back on. Real quick, one of the things that I love the guests to do is to give advice to other women who are in your similar circumstance. If you can talk to yourself maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, what would you say to her now? Because rest assured, she is in the comment section wanting to be where you're at right now. What would you say to her?
I would just say, you're enough. You are enough. Your existence is enough. You don't need to prove anything. You don't need to do anything or be anyone. You don't need people's approval to be valuable. You are just, that's it. You existing and breathing is enough. That's
it. And stay single. Just kidding. I had to add a little spice. So if someone wanted to contact you, what is the best way to reach you? I could put your information in the contact on the, I could put your information in the in
description.
That's it. I could put your information in the description box for someone who wants to reach out to you. Interestingly, a lot of people who have been on my show, they do actually have people reaching out to them, because this is what I keep saying. Your story will always resonate with at least one person. And if one person feels heard and understood by us telling our stories, then it's all worth it. So what is the best way to contact you?
Instagram, ChennaiTaku93. Mm-hmm. Yep. And also, if you could check out my blog, chennaitakundwa.tumblr.com, you can read my work on there and maybe comment and like and all that stuff.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And we would love to have you back on and catch us up and see where you've been.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love that.
All right, Chennai, thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much for watching. And remember, you can always reach out to Chennai if you want to reach out to her, if her story resonates with you. Remember, this is why we're telling the stories, because without fail, there is always someone in the comments who can relate to the person that I'm having on my show. That's why we're doing this. Your story is in the stories of others. As always, if you would like to come on the channel, if you want to share your story, if you have a skill you want to share with our audience, please email me at wendyrenee@gmail.com. We'll get you on the schedule. Be sure to like and subscribe and hit that little bell at the top. That'll let you know every single time that I post a video. My next upload, it's going to be awesome. I'm having a panel of women on this show. These amazing women who have stood up against narcissistic abuse, who have spoken out about how we were told to be silent for our entire lives. And we're going to cover the topic, women are to be silent in the congregation. That is actually a talk coming up in November. But when that talk is going to be presented to the congregation by a man, oh, you come back to my channel and we'll have a bunch of women talk about it, the women who've experienced it. All right, take care. We'll see you next time.